This episode is a recording of the event Spoken Ecologies, a reading of new and existing poetry in response to the exhibition Folded Memory. Using their poetry to bear witness to the kaleidoscopic stories of geology and ecology of Aotearoa, these readers guide us through shifting landscapes of time, extending the tendrils of human language out towards the more than human. Brought together by Tahuhu Kōrero Toi Summer Scholar in Art History at Te Heranga Waka Victoria University of Wellington for 2023-24, Margot Amontes de Oca, Spoken Ecologies, features poets Hannah Pira Aoake, Joan Fleming, Ash Davida Jane, Ruben Mita, Neve Hollis Locke, and Loretta Riach.
Tēnā tātou katoa, ēnā kai whakahaere o tēnei whare, ēnā kai tuhi, ēnā maruhiri, tēnā koutou. No mai haere mai ki te pātaka toi. Te whare e tū nei, tēnā koe, I nā maunga, nā awa, nā whenua, te moana, i tā kato nei, tēnā koutou katoa. Tēnā koutou a te ati awa, nā tangata whenua o tēnei rohe, nā mihi, nā mihi, nā mihi. Whakatau mai ki runga ki te kaupapa o te rā. O tira te whakaaturanga toi kupu. Nō reira, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā tātou katoa. Welcome everybody to this poetry reading, which is in response to this beautiful exhibition, Folded Memory, that you can see beginning all around you, and which was curated by Sue Ballard and Sophie Thorne. Thank you, first of all, to Sue for giving me the opportunity to do some research this summer under your supervision and giving me space to think outwards and sort of over and under the surfaces of art history. It taught me so much about the visual world and its intersections with the written one. Thank you also to Kate Lepper, who helped me sort out a lot of the logistics for this event, and to the tech crew who have been helping out with the sound and the screen here. And lastly, thank you so much to the poets who've agreed to read today. I'm in awe of all of you and your work, and it's been a real privilege to be part of Wellington's amazing poetry scene for the last couple of years. There's some really exciting stuff going on all the time, and you guys are always highlights of the journals and the events, so thank you for coming. Just to give you some context for why we decided to hold the reading in this part of the gallery, we're standing next to He Tōtara, which is a cross-section of a tree which is thought to have started its life in around 1480 and was felled in 1906. It was held in the School of Biological Sciences for many years, and it had kind of labels attached to its rings, sort of tracing New Zealand's colonial history. But placing it here at the beginning of this exhibition kind of imagines different memories for it that kind of extend beyond its rings and out into its sort of ghostly branches and roots. It kind of feeds all the artwork in the gallery here, all of the stories kind of spiraling out of it and converging on it at the same time. And on my right here is a moving image work by Nova Paul. It's called Rako, and it was made using hand-processed film, which was developed in the chlorophyll of puriri leaves. And in one essay, Paul describes the way this processing method shows us the mauri, the life force of the tree, because the image is made using and containing the DNA of the tree itself. It's kind of imbued with whakapapa. So this is all to say this exhibition is all about stories and whakapapa and memory. And I thought, what better place to read poetry than the spot where this whakapapa is concentrated in this Tōtara rangatira. But anyway, let's get on with the readings. The first poet we have today is Hannah Pira Aoake, who is beaming into us over Zoom from Kawerau. Hello, Hannah. I'm just checking everything is all good. You can hear me? Awesome. So Hannah whakapapas to Ngāti Mahuta, Ngāti Hinerangi, Waikato Tainui, Waitaha, Ngāti Waiwai ki Kaitahu Putini. They are a mother, artist, writer, and independent researcher based in Kawerau. They recently published writing in the Material Kinship Reader, Material Beyond Extraction, and Kinship Beyond the Nuclear Family, as well as online on Granta, Runway, ArtLink, ArtNow, The Art Paper, Unmagazine, and Running Dog. In 2020, they published a book of essays-ish called A Bathful of Kawakawa and Hot Water with Compound Press. They primarily co-organise Ketapai Press with Morgan Godfrey, a Māori space for sharing, learning, and publishing. Pera Awake is the recipient of the 2024 Curatorial Residency with Delfina Foundation and Metroland Cultures in London, an international exchange centered on community practice. Their collaborative work with Tarn Scott, Invasive Weeds, is currently on show in Folded Memory. It's just downstairs in the Lower Chartwell Gallery if you want to have a look at that after the reading, which I highly recommend. Welcome, Hannah.
Kia ora. Ngā mihi tuatahi ki a tangata whenua o Ngā Titu Wharito ki Kawarau me Te Ate Awa. E hiahia ana au ki te mihi I ngā tangata o Gaza me te mate o te tini o rātou tamariki, me te awa ki te moana, me mihi anō hoki ki a Margot, Kate, Sue, Sophie, Joan, Ash, Neve, Ruben, Loretta, te pātaka toi me te here nā waka ki a koutou te rangatira. Kia ora rawa atu ki a koutou. Te hunga mate, ki te hunga mate, te hunga ora ki te hunga ora, ki a koutou nā kanohi ora, tēnā koutou katoa. Nō reira, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou katoa. So I thought I would begin by reading. So the work that I made with Tarn Scott is a poem that I wrote that has been, letters have been hand beaten into little pieces of tin. And the work is called, and this poem is called, Invasive Weeds, or I Wish I Could Give You the World, But I Was Only Given Mud, Rot, and the Bones of a Half-Eaten Fish for My 7-Week-Old Child. First, swim after they cut me open. The mud tried to smother the sand stolen from the other side of the country to build the fake beach. There are no fish. Pipes are spurting wastewater into the harbour. Once a volcano here that erupted and shaped this body of water. I often want to hold water in my hand as if it was measured in weight rather than volume. Slippery and slimy, invasive weeds. In Europe, all the water is brown. Many bodies have floated in those waters, both alive and dead. Some were sold, some were stolen, some were just poor, some had no other options, and some ended up here. In summer, the water drowns so many here, as the sun gets hotter and the threat of fires loom. But the tuna started returning to the lakes and the rivers, despite the trout that don't belong there taking all the food. When my waters broke, the mucus was brown and it almost choked my baby floating inside my body. The baby didn't want to leave and arrived in a sterile grey factory with 20 people in blue aprons watching while David Bowie played. The surgeon's incision, King of the Goblins, please take this baby somewhere safe. Who can blame you for not wanting to leave the womb? I wish I could give you the world, but all I was given was mud, rot, and the bones of a half-eaten fish. Land back, but not written on earrings and sold online. Sea spray. Land back as praxis, not practice. The labour required to fix it or to not fix any of it. What are the consequences for the vulgarity and materialism of this colonial barbarism? Or rather, its dredges. Invasive weeds, native title. Hands that can never be clean, washing the sheets, soaking the nappies. Land back is in for this tiny baby. Land back is in not just the restitution of land or the power to make decisions, but the water, the birds, and all of our kin. Not loan ownership in a legal land title way. Land back is a rejection of corporate structures. Land back is in new knowledge meets old knowledge and not repeating the same mistakes and not mimicking the very institutions that we seek to critique. Land back as in no more mimicry. Land back as a futurity that includes self-determination, environmental sustainability, and economic justice. I wish I could give you the world, but I was only given mud, rot, and the bones of a half-eaten fish. Hair spreads out like lumps of seaweed smashing against the rocks. Sea fog, knife darts between fingers, slime, invasive weeds. The sandbags are breaking. The mounds are collapsing as the water licks the feet. Purebred dogs. The sea reclaims the shore. Breast milk leaking. Clothes latched to the chest of salt and sweat. Let down reflex. My body senses babies needing to feed, not my own but all others. Bodies in the endless cycle of hunger, something about staying still and never forgetting, wetting the bed, changing nappies, relaxing too much in the sauna, becoming only liquid. It's hard to hold on to anything in this economy. Sea spray, rata flour, ice cream, scream, Fonterra, dairy products, backbone of the nation state, pour animal fat down the drain, body made of algae from the river. Viruses are the most numerous biological entities on earth. I can't breathe in this mask, even after 7, 8, 9 booster shots, when most of the continent has only had one shot, if any. Border restrictions, wanting a slice of the pie and a seat at the table. I'll take all of the shots if it means that I keep you safe and I keep everyone I love safe. Variants fly out, old and new trade routes. Paranoia, distrust, that's an old open wound. Red, blue and green pills swallow them all. I wish I could give you the world, but I was only given mud, rot and the bones of a half-eaten fish. Ruo Moko shakes like a screaming child awake for 12 hours, wide-eyed and overtired, squirming but still asleep on my chest, searching for a feed, dreaming, but what to dream of. The cathedral is covered in plants again, all buildings reclaimed. Invasive weeds. It's less simple and more rapid than before. The ice melts and the swamps become farms again and again and again and again. Kumara mounds remain, dug into the hills by hand, elevator up to the sky, sea spray, cows overhand, shitting in the volcanic soil, productive, fertile, milk production stats. Babies aren't born anymore, they're ripped out. Pain erupts, but my pain hides another's pain who hides another's pain and so forth. It's hidden deep in the body, buried but growing. I wish I could give you the world, but I was only given mud, rot, and the bones of a half-eaten fish. Fossilized microorganisms, invasive weeds. Before there were just oceans, deep in the biosphere, in hypothermal vents, a collective memory, a shift. Nothing remains shut. There are no holidays, no breaks, no pauses. No secrets can stay hidden. Every story is remembered differently, but the soil knows the truth. The past is a scar on the land. It never completely heals, but the cut appears superficial and is closed until it opens again. I wish I could give you the world, but I was only given mud, rot, and the bones of half-eaten fish. I'm just going to read parts of a new poem, and then I'll start reading. When you want to understand, just look at the plants. We use our hands and we turn over the soil and the worms wriggle and we plant the seeds, even though permanence is not guaranteed. We know that roots can move deeply down into the earth's inner limbs. We know that tears are seeds and so are words and so are dreams. We know that if you truly belong to the land, then you don't dredge the volcanic mountains to build roads, and you don't dig up the wetlands, and you don't disturb the mangroves, and you don't value progress over continuity, and you don't drop so many bombs that it's the equivalent of dropping 2 atomic bombs into the soil that was once abundant with life. We love our land because it is part of us, with the rocks in our throat and in our hands hurling the tanks back. We gently ask Papa Tuanuku if we may take from her, and as we speak to the rocks, we grind into paint, then we write our names with and tell our stories to and paint our bodies with. We know that our names exist in an ever-growing circle that encompasses everything and will exist forever. We will protect and care for each rock and each blade of grass, and the rocks that are red like our blood will bleed into the earth from between our thighs and grow life even in the worst of situations. We will organize in big clusters like expanding microbes, and like the way the Pahutakawa shed their red flowers in the heat and settle into the cracks of the concrete. We are watering our gardens with our blistering words that roll off the tongue like an oriori, lulling Ruo Moko back to sleep. We will walk alongside our nannies and our babies and our ancestors all the way to the beehive, no matter how they try to sting us. We know that it's titidity not the treaty, and we know the difference between kuanatanga and ceding sovereignty, and we don't trust Vicky like we didn't trust Lizzie, and we certainly have no hope in Charlie. We will make sure that there is no referendum, and we won't take gambles. We know the consequences for those who lived in the goodness of people, only to be undone by their own misguided people, qualities, and regurgitating lines about endless growth. We know that those really nice, good people forget that no nation has a right to exist, especially ones funded by the fossil fuels excavated from the crust of the red earth, red dirt, by interested parties that rip apart their sacred places. We know we have to walk the talk, and we know what it means to be all waha and no kaha, and we see images every day of those mass graves, and we can't and we won't ever understand the depravity or how it came to this, and we can't do enough to stop the violence, even as expanding clusters of bodies are mourned over becoming martyrs. We understand that we must bear witness to the horror. We form waves and stand together, and we see all that is not right, like those deaths in custody and the small communities in the continent that was carved up for its resources and the places where the earth is drained of toxic minerals by children, so my fingers can tap on this screen. We feel our guts churn when it's revealed that there are children's bones lying underneath those schools on the continent where the muskrat placed dirt upon the turtle's back. We see the way religion can be manipulated and strangles people in their man-up sweatshirts, and how they clasp at the throat and offer hope to the hopeless when there are no other choices. And we know there are always choices, but they consist of choosing a poison to swallow or to live in a cage. We have lit a small fire, and we will become bigger and wake up the sleeping taniwha beneath the mountains that we belong to. We know we must walk a path against the house of money and the powerful, and those who dredge our water and dig into our ocean and cut the arteries of our lands, only to put cows on them and steal our water and bottle it and send it across seas and steal the food of our uncles and aunties who live in our homesteads, keeping the ahika burning. The fire's burning, and today we say enough is enough, and that we are always the inheritors of the true builders of our nation, and that the land of milk and honey always was and always will be our land from the river to the sea, because none of us are free unless all of us are free. Ngā mihi ki a koutou. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Hannah. That was really beautiful. And thank you again for beaming into us. The next poet that we have reading for us is Ash Davida Jane. Ash is a writer from Pōneke and a publisher at Tender Press. Their second collection of poetry, How to Live with Mammals, was published by Te Herenga Waka University Press and won second place in the 2021 Laurel Prize. Jane holds an MA in creative writing from the International Institute of Modern Letters and a BA Honours in English Literature from Te Herenga Waka. They regularly review books on RNZ. Welcome, Ash.
Kia ora koutou. No te whanganui a tāra aho ko Ash Davida Jane toko ingoa. I just want to, before I start, acknowledge that I am here because of Te Tiriti, and also, more important probably than any poems I could read right now, Free Palestine. I really tried to write something directly in response to this beautiful exhibition, and I found that I couldn't quite pull the words together, but luckily it turns out that I had already done it. So I'm going to read some poems from my book, How to Live with Mammals. This first one is called Undergrowth. It's a little bit of a love poem. At dusk, the birds by the road are loud as a fire. So much noise from such small lungs, we say. It seems impossible, but what's worse is we should be able to hear this anywhere. The branches always ripe with nests in spring. Birdsong so big we could dance to it. But the next day, we're overheating and everyone's too busy worrying to notice our spot under the trees. I'm imagining a giant ballroom with this leafy canopy for a roof, the floor a pool of cool green light. Nobody's been here for centuries. Most of the birds are gone too. But an ant crawls across the cracked marble, and somewhere in the silence, our buried forms turning back into earth are still in love, and the flowers pick themselves up and carry on. This second poem is called Transplanting. It's written for Dorothy Wordsworth, who was the sister of William Wordsworth, very famous romantic poet, who wrote these fantastic journals that basically nobody saw. And most of her brother's very famous poems are written from the content in those journals. So this is a poem where I was kind of thinking about what survives, but also what it means to try and put down roots in a place on land that doesn't belong to you as a Pākehā living on stolen land. Transplanting. In her body, I walk to Rydal Lake, gather foxgloves, come home for tea and write the names of trees, sycamores and firs in a grove of hazels. I mend her brother's clothes, help build the fire. I practice diligence in the face of her life. Look in the mirror and the vision fills with white noise. The shape in the glass like trying to count my fingers in a dream. In this year, I pause halfway up Mount Vic to catch my breath. Who was the last woman in my family who could name each of these trees by sight? Trees unknown to Dorothy or me. Dirt under our fingernails. Trying to rebuild our bodies with the land and the land with our bodies. I take the pot with the plant that died during transplant, empty it in the corner of the lot and hope nobody looks out to see me abandoning it there under its own dirt. It takes more than one human lifetime for a forest to grow. A glass bowl breaks on my kitchen floor and Dorothy bends down, picks up the shards as thick as my thumb, wraps them in sheets of paper and flourishes the bouquet. Afterwards, our fingers bloom red with tiny incisions. And I'll just read one more. In my memory, it is always daytime. In my memory, it is always daytime midsummer, and you and I are lying on the bed in that trapped room, the sun drawing stripes on our skin through the blinds. They were moments of sweetness in the worst summer of our lives. We don't get to choose what we remember. I'm scared of the things I will forget. One of my earliest memories is the time I answered the phone and spent 20 minutes telling a stranger she was my mum when it was just some other woman with the same name. Do you picture the world? How it changes in air to have it filled with birds chirping all day. I'm scared of turning bitter. I always want the possibility of running through a field and into somebody's arms. We can see it in our memories, a species laid bare, the nakedness of our wants. I think I'm in control, but this has already been decided. To see the future, all you have to do is look around. Every raindrop is prophetic, a crystal ball. They cascade down and shatter on the concrete. If you listen closely, you can hear the breaking. Walls amplify it, brick and glass. It sounds softer in the bush, where it soaks into the undergrowth. A memory of the groundwater, splintered. Thank you.
Thank you, Ash. Next up, we have Ruben Meter. Ruben is a poet, musician, and ecologist from Wellington. In 2022, he was awarded the Story Inc. Poetry Prize from the Institute of Modern Letters. And in 2023, he was the featured student poet in A Fine Line. His poetry has been published in a range of journals such as Starling, Landfall, Takahe, Tarot, and Sweet Mammalian. He likes fungi, sounds, fish, and campfires, and writes poetry that plays with overlapping realities. Welcome, Ruben.
Hey. I also haven't written anything that's in direct response, but, well, that's mainly because I lost the ability to write poetry a few months ago, which happens to everyone sometimes. But I found some things that I think speak to the same ideas of place and time. And this first one is called Loggers. It's going to be in the next issue of Minaret, thanks to Neve. Loggers. The sunken yellow heart of the fruit in the north inspired them to great things, and where the river completed the palette with slate blue, farmers improvised, grew crops that bit back with rows of shining black teeth, sprung from salt and obsidian. Every plant was promised a life short but fulfilling, reproduction, a little more water than strictly necessary, a friend, a view, and a song. Now their bones are stained with their own colour. We are all stained with our own colour. We watch them move to someone else's accord, watch a heron cast its weight over the water, become a happening. We are too far back, too cautious shrewd. Today we cast no reflection, so we are halved. I want to be a happening to this river, to return the view's favour, to momentarily exist in the projection. Where there are no reflections, we stand claustrophobically ourselves, the absence and presence combined in a shadow, stretching dryly out over the slow-breathing flowers. The logs float past down the river. They've painted them with faces, imitations of the others, animals, and here and there a whole horizon bobs unsteadily past, a sunken sun below the ripples. Does the river run brown from the awakened mud, or from the mingling of all pigments? Around the bend I know they will be lifted, dripping, on woven nets, current clean, born again in time for sunset. We retrace our footsteps and find ourselves imitating a million previous paths and choices. We read and feel the collision of presence and absence in the imprints of shadows. They are fossils, and we are fossilizing as we dig them. The woodworkers move in circles. By morning, new forms line the bank, and all memories of growth sleep deep in the functions of tables, chairs, fierce faces to watch over tidy rooms. We carry our sunken yellow hearts back down to the water, back to the water. I want to take a moment to say how amazing this exhibition is, and there couldn't possibly be a better exhibition to actually write, well, read in response to. And I'm going to read an alphabet poem about the compression of time. It's called All Suns. All barking suns rising on Lakeland, every clear sun rising on the singing sea. Three dogs went down to the water, the earth split and smoothed. All fresh suns rising on Sapland, every green sun rising on the ripening sea. Four hands ran down the branch, the ink winked and whispered. All jangling suns rising on Whiskerland, every kissing sun rising on the sleeping sea. Six lungs crept up from the water, the mud sighed and slept. All nowhere suns rising on Dreamland, every only sun rising on the only sea. Two pairs rolled down to the shore, the quicksand sang and swallowed. All rolling suns rising on Ribbonland, every salt sun rising on the circling sea. 12 teeth went down to the garden, the umber drank and darkened. All vast suns rising on Moonland, every wrinkling sun rising on the humming sea. 12 xylem streams flowed up from the root, the yoke pearled and parted. All the zenith suns rising on the long white sea. And I have one more poem. It's called The Beautiful Place. It's about any beautiful place. The beautiful place stays where it is, where it always has been, a golden beast in the sunshine. The visitors, incidental or pilgrims, bring things red and brown and heart-shaped from their shy homes. They do not know these things came from here, from underneath the beautiful place. The sunlight touches the beautiful place. It becomes a shadow. The sun will remain alone at the door, turning blue. Bedtime suits the beautiful place. It welcomes you in. The lancewood silhouettes perform their roles as the night's strongest flavor. The ground-dwelling birds continue to shun flight by never even thinking about it. The wallpaper drips honey into beautiful mouths, a beautiful taste. The beautiful place stays. It can't be removed. It is the definition of location. It's you who has to leave, and leave your shoes and rings where they belong, and leave only the purple particles of your shadow, and leave in a car, over a packed clay bridge, and leave with your hair down and your hands empty and your eyes open. Thank you for donating to the beautiful place. One day you'll be a part of us forever. Until then, go out and see. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Reuben. Our next poet is Joan Fleming. Joan Fleming's latest book is the verse novel Song of Less from Cordite Books, which explores the limits of love, language, and individualism in the ruins of ecological collapse. Her current project, The Fig Book, is a tragicomic failed love story that opens into an ecological folktale. She is the author of the poetry collections The Same as Yes and Failed Love Poems, and her honours include the Biggs Poetry Prize, the Verge Prize for Poetry, the Harry Jones Memorial Prize from the Hunter Writers' Centre, shortlisting for the Helen Ann Bell Poetry Bequest, a Creative New Zealand Writing Fellowship, and a Michael King Writers' Centre established residency. She is currently a teaching fellow at Te Heringa Waka Victoria University. Thank you, Joan.
Kia ora. Ko Joan toko ingoa, ko tēnei takomihi ki ngā tangata whenua o te rohe nei. Thank you to the organisers for inviting me, and to them and to E Totara for holding the space today. So I too am going to be affirming connection with the preoccupations of the show by reading from work that precedes the show. So I'm going to be reading from this book, Song of Less. As Margot said, it's a verse novel. It's set in a kind of degraded far future where this band of scroungers have been remade into cousins by a grandmother figure who's reworked language and reworked ritual in order to tie these people together as kin. So I'm going to read the section in the voice of Cousin Ground Pigeon. He is sort of reflecting on the before times and sort of speaking about his difficulty in submitting to these new terms of kinship. Yeah, so this is Cousin Ground Pigeon. Before, we were all wrapped up tight in the cloth of ourselves, and all the things we said and thought cooled in the fridge, and the fridge ran and was the things we did and made the earth hotter. I was a teacher and ready by the sea, half in love with the kids' weird wisdoms and half wishing to crack open their little bored-eyed heads. I lived with a woman I liked and tried to desire. Once a year, we'd drive the battered Subaru to a finger of land and plant grasses and the sprouts of giant flax as a keep safe against eroding seas we didn't quite believe in. The arguments we used to relish pitted the proper nouns of countries and the symbology of their new flags against each other. Remember countries? We watched the fire as I watch the fire now, and the answer is no. All some system whose distant workings I squint my mind towards, unlucky. In the morning, we'd tow the fire-bleached beer cans from the cold coals, swim in the sea, say sorry, pick at the plastic tide and fill a plastic bag with shreddings, or were they dead fish, drive back, drive to work. Was always telling myself I should take the bus, but I liked my calefaction, my private music, the insulated moment before the children's loud petitions and tribal pageantry charged through the linoleum hallways and used up all the will and patience sleep had given me back. I constructed living dioramas themed around the threatened delicacy of world, then instructed the children, move the cruel sun of the heat lamp closer. I watched their faces crumble, then I'd get them into a comfort circle. Next morning, though, they'd be coming in from the built world, wanting every novelty it dangled and getting it. How was I any different? With my habitats, my entitlements, my comforts, my holiday waste. When the winter we're still in started, curfew shortened the school hours and we all learned less and less. Surges made all channels of gas and light too unstable, and the sky got lilac in a way that spooked even the fixed crews who couldn't dispatch at night, what with all the lightning striking sideways. One day, when humanitarians blocked the freeways to protest the media muffle on the long-range weather reports, well, the kids were happy. Is a society crash like a plane crash? That sounds awesome. But we wouldn't have to come to school. But I like school. What's a humanitarian? Oh, I know. It's like a vegetarian, but they eat humans. I saw the end play out in clouds one time in a private spectacle on a hilltop ruin, best sky of my life. I spent nearly all of my before traveling like that. The cactus powder we whisked set quickly, a repulsive jello I think of sometimes when I'm lancing blisters, a stone in the gut we managed to house long enough for it to do its work before vomiting the glob onto the uphill path. We climbed, and the woman I lived with wouldn't stop talking, and it prickled my brain, so I took myself off just as time began to shimmer from its line and came peeling free of the cellophane of the moment. The grass was very grass, and down in it I laid. The wind was racing weather across the astrosphere, and then a jaguar over the horizon it reared unmistakably in its cumulus pelt and snarl, and I could have touched it if I'd reached. It came over me, a menace of intelligent shadow, and for this reason it is one of the only animal forms I can still call to memory in this hot, perpetual, half-light winter. Behind it trundled a gnashing cavalcade of other beings, all enormous and world, and I knew with great certainty that I was privy to a last parade. All of this was somehow hysterical and wondrous. And when the medicine had its show, it climaxed, and next to me was sat the devil with the rag eyes, laughing. His mouth was perfectly spherical as a naught. I clapped my hands. How we came to be there and what it was like to shuffle into the cabin of an airplane, hundreds of people strapped with their private possessions and wrapped up foods, a fuselage for have, and on arriving to ring up persons' continents away and hear leftovers of their voices. I cannot imagine it anymore. I did not wonder at it then. And now, when I call a rare warning across the hollow of the scrounge, I hear my limit. It hasn't been easy for me to take on old grandmother's words, so I don't. It saved us what she's managed, causing strangers to make themselves into family. I see the point of the ritual clustering, how it helps to speak the same language. I just can't sing all of its songs. But I want to be what? Contributive? It's a tattered sort of last gasp help, but strangely less constrained than the lessons I planned and delivered while we ate up the world. Now, when I see devils poling along the dust horizon, the flapping rags of their eyes, the bitten bread rolls of their two faces, I understand them as imprints. In a world without mirrors, the eye finds a way. It helps, too, that this one long season is hot, a haze trapped under the sky's lid. if this was a true cold winter, I think how we'd be beating our arms against our bodies. Think how we'd be rigid in the sleeping line against the pricking freeze. We'd be gone. You'd think, then, that we would call this spring or summer, but we cannot, and we don't. In the caves, there's no one person from before that I visit or summon. Instead, those nights are like the sex dreams I used to wake up happy from, guilt torquing the pleasure higher for how I had not earned it. My heart these days, it feels edible. The rest of me, a knot against cessation. Thank you.
Everyone should go and read Song of Less. It's incredible. The next reader, the penultimate reader that we have today, is Niamh Hollis-Locke. Niamh is a Pōneke-based writer, eco-poet and editor. Born in England but educated in Aotearoa, her creative practice blends landscape, folklore, archaeology and personal histories to explore ecological themes and ideas of belonging. Her work has been published widely in New Zealand and in the UK. And in 2023, she was shortlisted for the Ginkgo Prize Best Poem of the UK Landscape Award. Niamh is the current guest editor of Minarets, sub-editor for Rat World magazine, and when she can find the time, is writing her first collection. She holds a master's in creative writing, specializing in eco-fiction, a BA and BA ons in English literature, and is currently studying towards a grad dip in anthropology. Welcome, Niamh.
Kia ora. Before I start, I just want to acknowledge that as someone from England, I am a direct beneficiary of the same colonial system which has dispossessed so many people, and that is why I'm here. Yeah, like a lot of other people, I haven't really written anything directly in response to this, which is a bit naughty of me, but this exhibition has helped me to sort of get out of a writing rut and coalesce some thoughts that I've had for quite a while. So I've got three poems today, two new, one older. And the first one is Field Notes. Midsummer, 9 p.m, walking barefoot in the reserve after a storm, the sky still light, the city strung out across the backs of the hills. Dunes of last week's cut grass washed downslope against the bracken, drifts of pale wet stems rotting into one another, into one great wave, the tide sound of the road, the sweet milk scent of hay. No bugs this evening. Not because there are none. Not because they are leaving us alone. They have all been rained out of the air. They are hiding in the long grass. They are biding their time in the dark earth with the stones and the gas mains and other things taken for granted. Spray paint on a tree trunk luminous in the half dark. A scatter of moths around the floodlamps over the astroturf. Every night I pretend I do not hear the way the forest overflows with silence, the sound of absent indicator species violent, a blade. Underfoot, the dirt still warm as flesh. One plane in the pale sky, on the road the cars in their outposts of light. At night, the pylons stride across the land, endlessly, endlessly. So this next one is called On Visiting Stanton Drew, and I wrote it after visiting Stanton Drew in England, as the title suggests, and this one was shortlisted for the Ginkgo Prize. Frost-sharp morning, our breath white, we follow the stones uphill, walking the bounds of each circle widdershins. My feet aren't used to this and I'm stumbling, in my city shoes, on grass cropped short by winter and the rabbits. Onto the upper circle, through the kissing gate at the top of the field, plastic shivering on the fence wires, the sweet rot scent of cows and silage, and a single bird I cannot name twitching its small body, its small, fragile body, in and out of the hedge. Here, sheep droppings, a fallen stone in a hole descending, diving beneath the prone grey body into the dark, and in the fresh dirt at its mouth, wide paw prints, the suggestion of badger. I have never known a live one, never seen one breathing. I want to know him real, I want to know him warm, and in my mind I shrink myself, follow him down through the mud, through the strata of the Anthropocene, smell of animal and the wet, dark earth. And as we go, he presses offerings upon me, ring pulls and a hoard of rusted bottle caps, rotting cigarettes, a sharp flint point. Tell me, Badger, what was it like to see the first red sunrise when all the stones were new and gleaming, when the valley still held birdsong, when there were still woodlands and living things to fill them? What was it like when the air was fresh and clear? Driving home, starlings take us by surprise. Murmurations like smoke twisting themselves in and out of being over the bare fields. And this last one is also about England. I was trying to write it for a year, but I finally figured it out this week because of this exhibition. So thank you. Thank you, Margot, for inviting me to speak. And this is called Old Friend, Uffington White Horse, seen from the train in March after a long time away. The train moves south from Oxford towards nightfall in chalk country. Mile upon mile of rapeseed, then the ridge, dark through drifts of rain. And there, the horse, white horse, bright above the white grey land, running up the slope, welcoming me home. Bare hands, five-fingered like mine, dug him, the human urge to mark. In France, handprints in the dark, a herd running out of the rock 15 metres and 30,000 years from sunlight. I was here, I was me, I was, I am. Who made the first flute? Who found the first song? Who cut the first turf out of the back of the hill to shape him white chalk bone? A protest against the flow of years. He is running through the centuries towards the future. He is the land, he is the hill, dreaming of itself. 5 years since I last saw him, and I think he may go on forever. Here, before, and after me. I found my first grey hair last week, but today he is unaltered. Everything is always turning into everything else. Each day I look more like my mother. To be is to change, is to become undone. The folding of all things. The pendulum backswing out through the case. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Neve. Keep an eye out for the upcoming Minarets issue, everybody. The last poet on the lineup today is Larissa Riak, who is an artist and a writer from Aotearoa, but have recently moved to Nam, where they make art about timescales and landscapes and are an avid collector of trinkets and fossils. You can find their writing in journals like Sweet Mammalian, Starling, Minarets, Takahe Magazine, and Poetry Aotearoa Yearbook. Larissa is a very dear friend of mine, and they've asked me to read their poems on their behalf, seeing as they've just moved over to Australia. So I'm going to try and do their words justice today. The first one is a poem actually after Bill Hammond called Jingle Jangle Morning. Bill, your birds have gone south. They pulled up the mountains with their formidable forearms, picked up the smaller volcanic cones, bushels of rata and manuka, and took off. Just like that, our painted landscape is again laid bare. No more muscular lunging across gullies or the arc of a biblical wing to scoop us up and point us towards home. They left behind only the dark spaces overhung with lichen and small deposits of bones, shells cleaned of any meat, lakes frozen over with clasps of eels still inside them. No signal heralded their departure. No note was left. Not a song could be heard for miles. This next one, while this exhibition has been taking place, another one has been taking place in Te Papa, which is the dinosaur exhibition. And it's awesome and you should all go. And it does sort of evoke a similar sense of like a huge timescales and ancient stories. And so this Loretta wrote after we went to the exhibition together, and it's called A Dinosaur as King of the Shepherds. After visiting the museum and seeing the bones, why shouldn't we be impressed upon the earth? Did this day not mean something like all the rest, our arms freckled over in dead languages? When we are in the sea, our limbs spell out sentences of our time together. There is no way but forwards, the thigh bone of a dinosaur cast in plaster, crossing the sea in a cargo hold, the shepherd who found the bone sitting amongst the dust with his head in his hands. Meanwhile, a flock of lost sheep grow wild and wool blind. One day we'll look back and the mountains will be unrecognizable. a fern grown in 1830 pressed between the pages of a notebook. When we count the seconds, we do it in rivers, one Mississippi, two Mississippi. Is it cold in the water? Could you hear the comet before you saw it? Would we notice if the continent was drifting away from us, a new outline taking shape while we dive, skin patterned with seal light? A volcano pushing itself into the present moment, like a crescendo of keys jammed in a lock. In the museum, it is air-conditioned and impossible to say what time it is. You are taking me by the hand and leading me through the legs of the biggest thing to have ever lived. When we step outside, the sky has doubled in size. And this last one is, they said, written sort of like a guided nature walk, which Loretta says kind of reflects all the thinking that they've been doing about the layers of distance in this exhibition, from He Tōtara to the place that it grew, from the gallery to Te Nahere, and also the distances from their new home to Te Whanganui Atara, and from their words to my voice. It's called Guide to Walking. Listen to the sound of my voice. It is coming to you from many times. The lesson you need is not forthcoming without walking over it. Partition the days you are here with index cards and sandal wearing. Spend time alone under something larger than recent memory can allow. Take a left when you see the line of new growth. Follow this path as long as it will last. Hear the sound of air escaping, a lung, a foot presses sharply to a shovel, this pierced sigh, the word for distance in every language. Stop here where the roots meet you. Take three steps clockwise around every boundary peg. A sample can be collected here. Note carefully the atmospheric conditions for change. The data will not show you the full story. There are blank spaces the map cannot allow account for. The floorboards here are uneven. I would recommend pausing to count the days back. If you have reached a dead end, start digging. If there are no signs of life, lower your face into the hole. Look around for alternative routes. Don't forget to leave something so you can find your way back. Every step you take is changing this place. Try to walk with purpose. If you have to stop, there may be consequences. If you keep going, things will continue to change without warning. Walk a little longer. Find the place where the sky is root-bound. Finish here. Wait for it to come to you. Yeah, so those were Loretta's beautiful words. And that's it. Thank you all for coming so much. I hope these words have resonated with you. I hope you can take them with you as you go around and look at the art. And yeah, thank you all so much. Namahinui.